It's 4:45 on Monday afternoon in London. I'm Alex Fitch, and you're listening to the first episode of Panel Borders, Resonance FM's new weekly series about the world of comic books. If you've tuned in hoping to hear Celia and Michael's show about the smoking ban, Fag Break, that's finished, I'm afraid. But while we're on the subject of habits, I have to admit that I buy 40 to 60 comics a month, and over the following weeks, myself and my co-presenter Duncan Knott will be trying to convince listeners why you should try at least one a week and work up from there. To start off with, we've got the first of an occasional thread that will run through this series, where one comic book creator interviews another. This week's guest presenter is Paul Cornell, who writes the Marvel comic book Wisdom and has recently had his first graphic novel published, called Extinct, about gun-toting dinosaurs. He also writes for some series on TV called Doctor Who. He's talking to Peter David, one of America's most prolific comic book writers who has written for Spider-Man and the Hulk, and whose 1,000th comic was published last month.
I've been a tremendous fan of a lot of your work. I love writers who stay on comics for long runs. And I think your run on Hulk was exemplary on that.
Thank you.
But the Hulk is a tremendously hard character to write, I think. And you really... You sorted it in a way you often sort things, by generating a really interesting supporting cast and basically creating out of nothing a world for you and the readers to live in. It feels like a club. How long were you on Hulk for in the end?
Close to about 12 years.
Absolutely wonderful. I think that's one of those things we don't get enough of anymore. Somebody, you know, staying with a title.
Well, there's almost in this day and age a disincentive to do so because... The problem is, after a couple of years, the fans seem to get bored with you. No, you know, you can feel that you're turning out the best work that you ever turned out, but you're being held to a scrutiny that sometimes becomes absolutely impossible to live up to. Also, if you're doing the same book year in, year out, it's hard to get any promotion for it. What you hear about, the thing that gets publicity, the thing that gets fans talking, is if somebody's on a book for a couple of years and then they balk. And people go, oh, well, he's leaving. What's the next thing he's going to be doing? Whereas if you stay on a book for year after year after year, you get taken for granted. It's hard to really generate any news items. It's hard to generate any kind of attention. The marketing people don't seem to have the slightest clue how to garner interest in you because it's still the same writer. We have a very mercurial fan base these days, and sometimes a lengthy stay is rewarded with declining sales and lack of interest.
I see what you mean. When you left Hulk, did you still feel you had many, many stories to tell? It felt like that at the time.
Yes, I wanted to stay on through issue 500. My feeling at the time was that I wanted to stay on to issue 500, that would be my swan song. I felt that would be a good point to leave. You know, there's something nice and round and tidy about leaving with issue 500. And when I discovered that I was, in fact, leaving way earlier than I thought I was going to be, I more or less took every story concept that I had planned for the next 2.5 years and crunched the entire thing into one issue.
Yes.
Issue 467 features references to and allusions to every single thing that I was planning to do over the next 2.5 years. It was kind of like the Reader's Digest version of everything that I had planned. So at least I managed to touch on it to some degree. Sure wasn't the way that I intended to go out, but, you know, what can you do?
Wow. I don't know if this is difficult ground. I wanted to ask about the Captain Marvel stuff of a couple of years back when things seemed to get really difficult. I think all of us watching from outside never really understood what was going on, and I was wondering if you'd be able to tell us.
Sure. I've been doing, you know, Captain Marvel for a couple of years, and sales were, I had been told, not spectacular, but they were acceptable, which for a cosmic-oriented Marvel book is usually about the best you can hope for. Cosmic books are always a tough slog to try and garner fan interest. Suddenly, Marvel does a press release. Joe Quesada and...
Bill Gemmis?
Bill Gemmis, thank you. Joe Quesada and Bill Gemmis do a press release that announces that they are going to be raising the price on Captain Marvel. And the reason that they, along with a couple of other books, and the reason that was cited for it was low sales. And they said that this suggestion came from fans that they had discussed it with, because the fans had contended that they should raise the prices on the books in order to keep them around. And I was stunned, because number one, I've been told sales are fine, and number two, I found out about this through a press release online. It was upsetting to me because I had just come up with an idea for a story arc and a story direction that I thought was going to be absolutely kick-ass and generate a good deal of readership and a lot of buzz, and that was the storyline that developed into the Captain Marvel Goes Completely Nuts storyline. And I felt that I had just been essentially kneecapped, because my feeling was, here I was about to embark on this storyline, and Marvel had just essentially said, my sales suck and we're raising the prices. So just at the point where I thought we were going to be doing something to gain readership, instead, I thought we were going to now lose readership because the book had been essentially marked for cancellation. We were going to lose readers because the price was going up, and I just didn't like where that was going. So I did the math, and I figured how much more money they would be making for the book based on the raised prices and, you know, minus discounts, and I realized that it would be the equivalent of essentially what I get paid for an issue. So I still do a regular column called But I Digress in Comic Buyer's Guide, and I did an open letter to Joe Quesada and Bill Gemmis, because my attitude was, if they decided that they were going to announce their thoughts about Captain Marvel on the open, you know, open fan airwaves, that as it was, then I could do no less. And I stated, look, Joe, you have announced that the book is going to be going up in price. You've announced that sales aren't good. You've essentially hung a cancel me sign on it. So here's the offer that I'm going to make to you. I will write this book for $20.99. $20.99. A number that I kind of like. And in exchange for this, you will keep the price down on the title. In exchange for that, since the book will now be cheaper for you to produce, you keep the price down for the next year. And that way we will give fans a chance to come aboard on the book instead of chasing them away with a price hike. And I knew I was rolling dice on this. I really felt like I might indeed be finishing off my career at Marvel with this letter. And indeed, initially, Joe and Bill, but particularly Joe, were really pissed off. Then, slowly, what Joe and Bill came around to was the realization that all I was doing the same thing that they were doing. I was essentially playing the same game that they were. And they realized that they could actually make some serious hay out of this. So Joe and Bill came up with the concept of what was termed You Decide, which was that Captain Marvel would be relaunched along with a couple of other titles, and the sales on the book would determine who was the winner of You Decide. You know, and my attitude was, whatever, as long as I manage to keep my book coming out.
Well, that's cool. I mean, I really like Joe Quesada from the contact we've had. He seems a fairly straight-up guy. Seriously, my experience of Marvel has been so positive. I expected them to be kind of drawn by Jack Kirby and to be big, cigar-chomping, square-jawed people who would take no bull. But actually, they seem very laid-back and lovely and very understanding. I mean, Wisdom had almost no sales. I think I've met every individual reader of Wisdom. And, but they were still willing to give me 22 pages for the last issue. And, you know, I'm sure if we hadn't been a miniseries, we would have been a miniseries anyway. But, you know, I feel very, very positive about Marvel. I guess since you're, you know, still there and thriving, you must feel similar too.
Oh, very much. Things have changed over the past couple of years. I mean, you know, I don't think that Bill Gemmis was a bad guy, so to speak, but I think to some degree, he and Joe brought out the worst in each other, and I think that Gemmis' departure really helped Joe in many regards. I mean, I really do. I mean, when the two of them were together, they had this kind of like, you know, wrestling villain mentality that shone and pissed off tons and tons and tons of people. And you can only piss off so many people for so long before you wind up sinking yourself. And I think to a certain degree, that's what Bill wound up doing. Ever since those times, I've had absolutely no problem with Joe. Indeed, our relationship has thrived. I mean, you know, Joe has been an absolute joy to work with. I mean, when I was given Dark Tower, Joe called me personally. I mean, this wasn't an editor. This wasn't, you know, Ralph Macchio or someone giving me a call and asking. This was Joe Quesada saying, we want to do this project, and you're our go-to guy to do the script. I mean, it came directly from Quesada.
Well, that's wonderful.
So, you know, it's been great, and I'm now exclusive with Marvel. So what it really developed into was, hey, Peter, do you want to keep doing the exact same thing you're doing now but get medical coverage? And I thought, okay.
What I really like about him is he really has a flair for publicity, but it's often with a very positive edge. I mean, one of the things I can't get used to with comics, I mean, I'm used to the Doctor Who fan audience, and as a Doctor Who fan myself, I know we are a scary audience. We eat our young. But and that's one of the things, actually, that kind of evolutionary pressure that I think keeps Doctor Who fans creative and keeps so many good writers, artists, directors, etc., coming out of that fandom. But I find comics fandom online to be very harsh indeed, and I think Joe handles that with a great deal of decorum. Actually, I think he does very well with that.
I think so. I mean, I don't think he's really given enough credit for that. And yeah, some of the fans can be just unbelievably picayune. I mean, for instance, I did a Spider-Man story in which I had Uncle Ben from an alternate dimension because, you know, why not? You know, I mean, hell, you had Doctor Who had Rose's father from another dimension, and nobody blinked an eye.
Well, absolutely.
You know? So I had Uncle Ben from another dimension, and Uncle Ben shows up just as Aunt May is out on a date with Jarvis. And Uncle Ben winds up decking Jarvis.
Marvel readers might not have imagined ever happening.
Well, it's more than that. It's more than that. I got outraged letters from fans who said, so help me God, how could this possibly have happened when it was established in an issue of Avengers 20 years ago that Jarvis boxed in college? So how could Uncle Ben possibly have sucker punched him and knocked him flat because of this story of continuity that it violates from 20 years ago?
I do wonder if people who make comments like that don't keep seeing plot holes in real life all the time and complaining about them.
Bet. How can Bill Clinton possibly be having sex with an intern? He's married. Married men don't have sex with other women. It could not possibly be.
I was thinking the other day, and this is evil of me, that if that plot hole mentality, say, was applied to the end of Casablanca, where Nick walks off into the sunset with Captain Renault, they do, I think this could be the beauty of a beautiful friendship. Really, the lines you need to add there are, even though I have just shot a high-ranking German officer, and doubtless many of his men will be running in here, we will be able to hear them running from quite a long way away, and I have a car parked round in the corner that will take us to safety. I say that this is the beginning of a beautiful friendship, even though we have already known each other for a long time, because this marks a new emotional stage for us. I think there are people out there who would need that kind of detail for that scene to work for them.
I never thought about it that way, but yeah.
To utilize one of comics' enduring traditions, Peter and Paul's interview continues on Thursday in this week's I'm Ready for My Close-Up at 10:30 p.m., in which they'll be talking about writing for TV and writing novelizations of TV shows. Call it a crossover if you like. And then they finish their talk about comics next Monday at 4:45 again. For more info and to download the podcast, please visit www.panelborders.com. And Panel Borders will be on at the same time next week.